I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Time to take KSL Outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And we welcome you back to hour number two and the final one for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. It is always a pleasure to have you with us here on a Saturday morning. I'm looking forward to our next conversation. It's an old friend of the program that we haven't touched base with in a long time. Although, Greg Paul, I understand that you do get together with another character that jumps on board with us here, Bob Grove, from time to time, and do a little hiking together.
I do. In fact, I'm in St. George, and just before you called me, I left a message for Bob to get together if we could and maybe do a hike down here.
For those who don't remember your story, you're a guy, if there is a mountain to climb, you're gonna go climb it. And I'm trying to remember, was it once, twice, three times we connected with you on Everest?
Actually, three times on Everest, and once on Ama de Blom, which you, your partner nicknamed I'm a Dumb Blonde, which stands out in everybody's memory on our expedition.
Yeah, it's become a big hit over there in that part of the world in Kathmandu, I understand. Sure. Yeah, and remind people of your success or how the mountain turned you away on those occasions.
Well, there was a couple of disasters that occurred over in Nepal while we were over there. Avalanches, earthquakes, just your typical disasters that happen on mountains with people getting altitude sickness. And it took me, it wasn't until my fifth trip over there, third expedition on Mount Everest in 2016, that I was able to actually summit. And I was lucky enough to be one of the first people up there after the mountain basically shut down climbers for 3 years in a row. And I was the first person to summit an 8,000 meter peak with two artificial knees. So
yeah,
that's my story.
And you're sticking to it. One of those trips,
right.
One of those trips was a very emotional trip for you with your son, right?
Well, my wife and son came over my wife on two of those expeditions and my 14-year-old son on one. And yeah, they were wondering if I was okay up on the mountain right after they got back to Kathmandu, and there was kind of a lack of information coming off the mountain. And so there was a period of time when nobody knew what was going on. And yeah, that was quite an experience.
Yeah. I'll always be grateful for your candor in sharing live with us on a SkyCall satellite phone, not just your personal experience, but some of the emotions that were going through your head, because you did know some of those Sherpas that died at least on one of those occasions, and it impacted you greatly. But let me just jump forward here to why I was reminded to reach out to you. I follow you. We're friends on Facebook. And you happen to be in a spot this past week, I guess, that I discovered for the first time this past summer. My brother and I and some friends of theirs had planned to be in Switzerland and doing a Harley-Davidson tour of Europe through the Alps in August, and obviously the pandemic ruined all of that for us. So we shifted gears and decided we'd go try riding through parts of Utah to some national parks, and then hit Colorado and take the Million Dollar Highway, which of course drops you right on top of a little town. And I hope I'm saying it right. Ouray?
Right, Ouray.
Yeah.
It's nicknamed Little Switzerland, so you picked a good spot to replace your trip to Europe.
Well, the funny thing, you know that sign, as you come over the $1 million highway from the Durango side and drop in, there's a giant sign that says the Switzerland of America, and we took the opportunity to get a picture with all of our motorcycles right there because it happened on the very day we would have been touring Switzerland, and we had no idea that we'd actually find that spot. But we fell in love with Jura. My gosh, that's a beautiful spot. And we stayed in a little place. You'll recognize it. I don't remember the name, but as you enter the town from the $1 million highway side, you take a quick left turn, and it's right down by some hot springs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Might have been Twin Peaks Lodge, or there's another one. I usually stay at Twin Peaks Lodge because they have their own hot spring.
It was that, yeah. And it says Switzerland of America right there on the side of the building, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. That's where we stayed. Beautiful spot. Anyway, you went ice climbing there, and I've always wondered why, and we've never had anybody on to really explain to us what ice climbing is all about, but it scares the bejeebers out of me. Is it safer, less safe than regular rock climbing? Because it just looks like a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, I guess it's all relative. In Ouray, they have these what's called the Box Canyon, and there's a lot of mining in that area, and they have a large pipe that comes out of the mountains on top of this Box Canyon that drops anywhere from 80 feet to 200 feet down to a riverbed. And this iron pipe that's been there for probably 100 years still has water going through it, and the local people there have tapped into that and put PVC pipes along about over a mile of this Box Canyon, and then they've put sprinklers out about every 20 feet, and by mid-December, they create an artificial outdoor ice climbing wall that runs, you know, about a mile long. There's got to be close to 100 routes that they create by sprinkling water every night that freezes up. And from mid-December until probably the end of April, this is a destination for ice climbers of all level of ability.
And they refer to it, if I'm looking at this right, as a world famous ice park, correct?
Correct. And in fact, in most years coming up this weekend, they have an ice climbing festival there that brings in thousands of people from all over the country to enjoy not only the town, the hot springs, but this amazing venue where literally anybody can climb and do so quite safely because it's all what's referred to as, 99% top rope. They've built the city folk that have built anchors on top of the cliffs, on top of the canyon, that make putting up ropes and, you know, getting down into the canyon and climbing the ice, I would say relatively safely, you know, depending on, you know, how you set the ropes. And that's something everybody learns, obviously, when you get there. But you'll see families, young kids, they have a beginner ice wall where there's kids that are, you know, 5 or 6 going up. It's actually, I find, easier than rock climbing, just because you're holding on to these axes as opposed to, you know, crimping up a wall with your fingers. And a combination of having ice axes and crampons keep you attached to the wall because you're swinging your ice and you're kicking your crampons in. And usually ice isn't as vertical as some rock walls are. So anyway, I don't want to belabor the point, but I find that it's something you can do all day long without getting burnt out. There's an equal number of men and women that enjoy the sport. It's just a good time.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, even some young kids are doing this would tell you that it is fairly safe. I've always wondered, and I guess if they're, you know, spraying sprinklers there every night, it's refreshing that ice. But I wondered with the number of people that might be participating on any given day and the weather itself, if it might weaken parts of that ice and make it dangerous.
Well, when you get there in the morning, first thing, you do shatter some of the ice as you climb up, and it might be weak, but you're on top rope. In other words, there's two ways of climbing rock or ice. On lead, where you go up carrying the rope with you and you put your protection. In the case of ice, there's ice screws that you screw in, and then you attach your rope to a carabiner, and then you continue up.
Yeah, that's a no vote for me, just so you know.
and they do that in Provo Canyon on Bridalville Falls. They do that in Little Cottonwood Canyon on something called the Great White Icicle. And you need to be proficient there, and you're taking on some risk, and you got to know how to read the ice. But in the ice park, you set up a rope from above, and then you climb with the rope assisting you. So if something breaks or you slip off, you're held relatively, safely by the rope, and you're not going to fall. So you can get on a big icicle and kind of take some risk that you may not do leading. And if that icicle decides to break off, at least you're still on a rope and you're hanging there.
Right.
And it gives you the ability to play and push your limits more safely than if you were to be out there leading a climb.
Yeah. Not something you want to do on your own if you're a novice, though, right? You want to be with somebody that understands how this works.
Yeah. And in Ure, there's various guiding services, San Juan Mountain Guides, that take people out. In fact, when we were there on Friday and Saturday, there was multiple groups of, like a family going out and learning how to do it, and groups of college students, just groups going out with these guides that work out of Ure. So it's a good place to go and learn how to do it. It's a good place, once you've learned how to do it, to go do it yourself, because it's the anchors and all the safety measures they take, and the fact that they're creating this ice and maintaining it daily. It's a pleasure to go there. And then at 4 o'clock, they shut it down. If you're not out of the park, you start to get sprinkled on by the sprinklers, which when I first did it, I wasn't sure what was coming down on me. I thought somebody might have been up there sort of relieving themselves, and I was a little nervous about that.
you actually become part of the ice climbing wall is what you're telling
me. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
but being able to go back to your hotel at 4 o'clock and jump into a hot spring for an hour and then go out to dinner, that's just a combination you can't beat.
Yeah.
And you've been in the town and seen how charming it is.
Yeah.
And even with COVID, the restaurants are open. Of course, there's only 25% capacity.
Yeah.
Everybody's, taking the normal precautions, but it's still, the town is still going and people are there, and climbers are typically pretty conscientious of safety measures anyway, so they're all abiding the distancing rules and what have you. So I felt very safe and, good there.
We are completely out of time here, but you've just you've explained to our listeners why I was excited to have you explain it to me about what ice climbing is all about. And by the way, the pictures of that wall are just unbelievable, with that ice cascading down and the different colors. And I would imagine in the sunlight, it's even more spectacular. But for those that have never been there, let me spell it for you, because it is a little different. It's O-U-R-A-Y, Ure, Colorado. Not a bad drive, by the way, from Salt Lake City, and just a beautiful spot in all seasons of the year. And they have some fantastic restaurants. We had some great Mexican food there that was a little bit of a fusion thing with a little Asian twist to it, which was unusual. As always, Greg, we have appreciated through the years your contribution to the show, and I'm glad we caught up with each other today.
That was great. Yeah, thanks for reaching out.
Stay with us. We'll have more of KSL Outdoors Radio coming right up.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
My thanks again to Greg Paul for getting us on top of this idea of ice climbing. Not anything I ever plan on doing, Bob Grove, but I knew if there was one guy that could bring us up to speed, it was Greg, and he's a good friend of yours, too, I know.
Yeah, he's down here this week, and in fact, he called me yesterday asking about an area that I had taken to before to do a 400-foot rappel. That's Greg.
Yeah. If there is a mountain or a hill to climb somewhere, he's going to be the guy doing it. And it doesn't matter if it's covered with ice. He'll find a way. Hey, in the few minutes that we have here, I wanted to ask you, we did a story this week on Utah's Morning News about The Wave, which, again, truth in advertising, I have never been to, but it's on the bucket list. And it, of course, is that amazing area near the Utah-Arizona border that few people have been able to see because they've had such limitations on the number of permits per day. But the reason it was in the news this week is under a new decision from the Trump administration, the number of hiking permits is going to increase from 20 to 64 and or 16 groups per day, whichever comes first. The BLM could implement further increases or decreases depending on how things go. I just wondered how you felt about that.
Yeah, that's, you know, that a lot of people are going to be very excited about that because it's a hard ticket to get. I've been hiking in the Wave even before there was a lottery back in the years before it was very well known. And I've been in since. I remember going in one day since the lottery and ran into a couple that tried 11 times before they finally got picked. And there was another couple there that tried and got in their first try. Yeah. So this is going to open up, but it's going to also get a lot of pushback because it says, you know, it's a fairly fragile area. And when I've just seen in other areas where you get a lot of traffic, what we've seen here more recently in the Zion area with all the damage that's been done, now you're going to get a lot of groups out there. They're going to be pushing back hard on this. It's still not that big a number. You know, 64 a day.
Didn't you say they were looking for 90 or something or hoping to?
At one point, they were talking about 96. So this is a compromise from the original number that was thrown out from, you know, going to 64 from 20. So it will make a difference. There's a lot of people, you know, right now until the change with 20, it was 10 online and 10 walking up to the BLM field office in Kanab the night before and standing in line hoping to be chosen the next 10. Hmm. Making the 20 for the day. And a lot of people come here just by, you know, just for the hope, you know, the odds of maybe getting, being chosen one of those 10 and not getting chosen. They've come here from great distances. We'd always tell them, you know, that's not all is lost because there's so many other amazing places to go see if you don't go to the Wave. I love the Wave. It's really cool, but I don't think, you know, I think there are other areas in southern Utah and northern Arizona that are equally as impressive as the Wave, but it's unique.
Yeah.
It's the one that you see in a lot of postcards.
Well, and if there's a huge impact on it, it's not going to last long. As I just said, the BLM will be looking to make changes depending on how this goes. But you mentioned how tough of a ticket it was or a permit. Here's an example. In 2018, more than 200,000 individuals applied for 7,300 hiking permits available annually, with only 20 allowed per day through both the online and walk-up lotteries you were talking about. Only 3.6% of applicants were able to get a permit to access the Wave.
Yeah, and it is. It's a hard ticket to get, and the demand is growing. So, you know, increasing it to 64 will help some, not a whole lot, but it will, you know, more than triples. But I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on that number. I'll be surprised if it sticks, but maybe it will. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And here's a quote from the BLM Utah State Director, Greg Sheehan. He says the Kanab field office will continue to run the next day lottery in an efficient and respectful manner. This decision provides additional safety for visitors and will hopefully decrease the workload on Kane County's already busy search and rescue personnel. Just I would just add to that, you know, if you're going to go there, and hopefully this place is remote enough and you have to jump through enough hoops that only those who would treat it the right way will be looking to get these extra permits and go and have this experience. But boy, to see what nature has done is pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and this is a primitive area. People get lost in there all the time. We've had people die in there, you know, from getting dehydrated, disoriented, and lost. So It's not a classic trail that's marked that you just follow along the signs. It is primitive.
All right, we're going to take another break. By the way, if you want to, have you got wave photos on your blog site? By the way,
I probably do. I'll put some up.
Attaboy. Put you on the spot there. Just look them up online at roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com. Someday, Mark will actually come back from Mexico, maybe. And we'll look forward to having him on again. Stay with us, though. Coming up, it's snow day right around the corner. Emily Summers checks in from Deer Valley. We'll find out about anything new happening at the resort and some great dining opportunities up there as well.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.